I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart. I will tell of all your wonderful deeds. I will be glad and exult in you. I will sing praise to your name, O Most High. When my enemies turned back, they stumbled and perished before you. For you have maintained my just cause. You have sat on the throne giving righteous judgment. You have rebuked the nations. You have destroyed the wicked. You have blotted out their name forever and ever. The enemies have vanished in everlasting ruins. Their cities you have rooted out. The very memory of them has perished. But the Lord sits enthroned forever. He has established his throne for judgment. He judges the world with righteousness. He judges the world with equity. The Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. And those who know your name put their trust in you, for you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you. Sing praises to the Lord who dwells in Zion. Declare his deeds among the peoples. For he who avenges blood is mindful of them. He does not forget the cry of the afflicted. Be gracious to me, O Lord. See what I suffer from those who hate me. You are the one who lifts me up from the gates of death, so that I may recount all your praises, and in the gates of daughter Zion rejoice in your deliverance. The nations have sunk in the pit that they have made, in the net that they hid has their own foot been caught. The Lord has made himself known. He has executed judgment. The wicked are snared in the work of their own hands. The wicked shall depart to Sheol, all the nations that forget God. For the needy shall not always be forgotten, nor the hope of the poor perish forever. Rise up, O Lord. Do not let mortals prevail. Let the nations be judged before you. Put them in fear, O Lord. Let the nations know they are only human. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I have a question for you today. What do NCIS, Blue Buds, mystery novels, and the Book of Psalms have in common? Anybody know? Each one is devoted to the pursuit of justice. Justice is a recurring human issue. There is trouble in the world, and we want it corrected. There is violence in the neighborhood, and we want it to stop. There are some who are afflicted and oppressed, and they are afflicted and oppressed by those who profit from the affliction and the oppression. And so Leroy Jethro Gibbs, Frank Reagan, Agatha Christie, and the psalmist all take their stand for what is right. That's kind of the core of Psalm 9, and admittedly, Psalm 9 rambles a bit, and for good reason. Each verse begins with another letter of the Hebrew alphabet. This is called an acrostic. It's been created as a meditation, glued together with Psalm 10, which follows it. Yet the psalm holds together with Psalm 10 with a single gravitational theme. The world is a mess because the wicked have made it so. They have twisted public operations in their own favor. They have propped up themselves while putting others down. They have plundered the public good and lined their own pockets, and they have maintained their position through force and violence. God won't stand for any of this. Now, this is exactly the kind of injustice that is the recurring plot of popular TV shows, movies, books, and far too much of our public life. Every day it spreads across the headlines. Injustice is so pervasive that we begin to believe, well, this is just the way it is. And it doesn't touch us directly. If we aren't the victims who suffer, we're tempted to keep our heads down and convince ourselves it's not as bad as it sounds. But the Psalms consistently remind us that God does not stand apart from a broken world. Psalm 9 declares that God sits upon the throne forever, and from that throne, God judges the world with righteousness and equity. Let's wrap our brains around this for just a little bit. The Bible says there's a throne, a single throne. There's a judge, it's only one judge. And all the smaller thrones and all the lesser judges are called upon to exert the fairness of God. That's why it is a scandal of biblical proportions for a judge to take a bribe or a public official to plunder the common good. And this is precisely like why one of the Ten Commandments is aimed specifically toward anybody who distorts the truth and bears false witness. God has set up the world so that everybody and everything has the freedom to flourish. God's table is level. All have equal access to it. The problem seems to come when someone wants to flourish at the expense of somebody else. They want more of the pie, even if that means others go hungry. The oppressor divides and excludes in order to gain more, and then has established some ways to maintain the grab. Now, all of this sounds pretty abstract, but it isn't at all. In the last 4 or 5 months, a number of the folks of our congregation have been learning about good old-fashioned American racism. Discovered that the first slaves were imported in 1619 as a way of getting cheap labor and larger profits for the landowners. They were lining their pockets at the expense of those who picked the cotton. When slavery was outlawed by Congress in the 1860s, it simply bubbled up in other forms by taking away the vote, or segregating the schools, or redlining the suburbs, or bringing in junk psychology, or establishing stupid laws, or enacting forms of brutality. In fact, just in the last week, over coffee, I learned there was a time not so long ago when real estate agents assured newcomers in Clark Summit that none of the homes here would ever be sold to African Americans. I don't know if that's true. At least it wasn't officially true, or even legally right, if ever openly stated. Yet let me remind us, this is the kind of thing that perpetuates the establishing of so-called good neighborhoods and bad neighborhoods, and a lot of those so-called bad neighborhoods, we can be fairly certain, were created by exclusion, deprivation, and greed. In short, injustice. And Psalm says, God won't stand for any of this. God sits upon the throne. God establishes that throne for justice. In the words of our psalm, the needy shall not be forgotten, nor the hope of the poor perish forever. It's a theme that recurs many, many times and places in our Jewish and Christian scriptures. And if we haven't noticed that, we're probably simply not paying attention, or we've softened up, or we're avoiding the harsher truths about what it means to be human. One of the other psalms, Psalm 98, is the basis of a favorite Christmas carol. Let's see if you remember it. Joy to the world, the Lord has come, let earth receive her King. You ever hear that one? Let every heart prepare him room, and heaven and nature sing. Ah, we love that one. We're required to sing it on Christmas Eve. And heaven and nature sing. What are they singing about? Well, keep reading to the last verse of Psalm 98. The Lord is coming to judge the earth. He will judge the world with righteousness and the people with equity. or as the Christmas Carol puts it, not in the future tense, but the present tense. He rules the world with truth and grace and makes the nations prove the glories of his righteousness and wonders of his love. God's justice always expresses the glories of God's righteousness and the wonders of God's love. It holds them together. What is true righteousness but the love of neighbor, the fair treatment of neighbor, in the name of the love of God, which is love for all of us, not merely some of us? Righteousness is always expressed in love, not gushy love, but active love, muscular love, love that works for the benefit of all. Now, this can be hard to keep untangled, if only because our own emotions get in the way, our fears bubble up. When we hear about justice, or we regard God as judge, one of the first things we think about is punishment. And we get instructed by television that justice on a television is often reduced to putting bad guys in jail or shooting them or something worse. In all cases, something less of what Scripture teaches. I was in the supermarket checkout just this last week considering a pack of gum. Did I want Juicy Fruit or mint? And suddenly, a headline jumped off the page. Grim justice for murdered wife and unborn son. Now, it's not every day I find a sermon illustration on the cover of the National Enquirer. It's been even longer since I ever bought a copy, but that headline and this sermon were perking, and they prompted me to skip the chewing gum, toss the tabloid in the grocery bag with the apples, and take it home to read. The story is about Scott Peterson, jailed in California for taking his pregnant wife's life almost 20 years ago in California. These days, he is in San Quentin, and according to the headline, apparently dying of COVID-19. This is the grim justice of the headline. Peterson did something terrible, he's jailed for it, but now he's really receiving his just punishment. So I turned to read the rest of the story on page 15. Turns out, according to the article, there is no confirmation that Mr. Peterson actually has COVID-19, although a number of his inmates have tested positive. And another thing the anonymous author of this unsigned article points out is that Mr. Peterson has filed an appeal in the 2002 case, claiming he didn't receive a fair trial, and the California Supreme Court finds that worthy enough to review the case and rule on it soon. And then there was the last line of the article, sufficiently inflammatory that it would probably never appear in the Washington Post or the Scranton Times Tribune. It read, "Sources in his wife's camp maintain he is guilty and said they feel justice would only truly be served when Peterson rots in hell." Apparently, they've been harboring a grudge for a pretty long time. It wasn't enough to simply send him to jail, suggesting that they themselves are now locked in another kind of emotional prison. Here's the problem with exterminating all the evildoers. None of us would be left. What does the Bible say? All we like sheep have gone astray. All we have turned our own way. This is how one of the prophets, Prophet Isaiah, describes our common human condition. In every courtroom, there are those who are condemned, and there are also those who are relieved that they haven't yet been caught. And sometimes the human justice system gets it right, and sometimes there are more cases than can ever be processed. It's also complicated by the fact that human judgment can be just as tainted by self-interest as anything else. Which might be why Jesus looks at his followers and says, "Don't judge." He is not merely wagging his finger at all the self-righteous Christians who think they're better than others. For that, what that's worth, Psalm 26 will address that one in a couple of weeks. More than judging the judgmental, Jesus is telling the truth that none of us can see all things clearly. As he goes on to say, we see the speck in the neighbor's eye, but we miss the log in our own eye. This is why we need God as the judge, the ultimate judge. God sees all things, no matter how tangled, how twisted. God perceives our life with absolute truth. In the language of Psalm 9, there are some who are afflicted and there are some who are oppressors. There are the needy and the greedy. And the truth is that many of us stand somewhere in between, perhaps tainted, perhaps victimized, depending on what day of the week it is. And God sees it all. And God sees through it all. I must believe in a God like this, even if I can't see it yet. I have to believe there is an order to the universe, even when I am surrounded by chaos. I must trust in an ultimate clarity and truth, particularly when I am reminded of my own self-deception. And God is the judge. How could it be otherwise? God's character is perfect goodness, and God has no tolerance for anything less than goodness. What saves our life from extermination are two other divine qualities. First, God's long-suffering patience, which is an expression of love for us. And second, God's determination to make all things right, even if it's going to take a while. As someone has said, God is committed to a rule of just law, as one who can be counted on to intervene on behalf of those treated unjustly and against what is regarded as unequitable treatment. So this, friends, is Psalm 9, declaring that God will make everything right, that God is working even now to accomplish this righteousness. Given who we are, given who we are prone to be, this psalm is God's invitation for you and me to stand on the right side of history, to defend the weak, to redress the exploited. It is hard work, long-term work, costly work, and it is holy work. In the justice of God, our judge, poor folk won't always be forgotten. For God is love, holy, righteous love. And seated eternally on the throne, God always has the last word. All praise to the Holy One.